Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Seriously, do you even know the truth? We're in a state.
Won't give up, won't stand down. Commander in Chief, TV Navarro, the best record ever in many, many, many years. And like the song, Evil Destruction. Many years ago, people didn't like that song either. He told the truth. Mr. Barry told the truth. You don't believe we're on the eve of destruction. Then we're going to do a tribute to Roy Rogers, our bounty fund. BASS founder, broadcaster, writer, spiritualist, can't believe it's been 12 years. Time goes by, so you have fun. Welcome to the GLC Healthcare Strike. Call me at 646-727-3649. Thank you, Black Guys, for that work for another year. BASSNewsroom.com. It's my turn to get a call. Moving into this 1,100 show this year. Saturday morning, you get the Oba, Mighty Oba. George Randy, the Rad Man, the Pro Dog Plus, the Winner's Edge, on Saturday mornings at 11 o'clock on the Pacific Time, Michael Zinger, Associated Raw, the Arting, Political, and Social Sports News. Once again, it's a musical bar stream, the musical bar stream. Wednesday is a musical surf ride with Michael Zingham. Guns is the brother Anthony Johnson and the Anthony Johnson Show. On Saturday, Friday night, either Saturday or Friday night, 6 If your kids are getting A's in school, you need to contact Travis on Facebook.com. Remember Earl Rogers, as we go to today, in New York City, New York, the Fannie B.S. and writers and broadcasters. Join the Gold Caravan and the Soul Patrol on Facebook.com. Right now we're going to do anything on the interview we did in Canada a few years ago. Earl Rogers and the Vibe in Vegas podcast show.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Vibe here. Hope you're keeping blessed and highly favored. And as always, we don't take it for granted, and it is a privilege to be able to share with you, the listener, and your support we don't take for granted also. Special guest on the line today is Roland Rogers. He is the CEO of the Black Athlete Sport Network, which can be found at www.blackathlete.net. And we're going to have a nice time to share in here. We're going to go back and just kick it back a little bit. Roland's going to talk a little bit about himself, and he has a wide area of experiences, not just primarily in sports and the coverage of sports, but there's more to him. In the brief time I've got to know him, he's always evolving, and he has the right mindset, and he's very passionate. So very excited to get empowered, enlightened, educated, and energized by Roland Rogers. Roland, how are you today?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Blessed and highly favored. Really good to have you on the show. How's your day been keeping today?
Well, it's Easter and it's Saturday, and my little girl, who's 3 years old, just had a little Easter egg coloring party with my wife's old friend, and it was kind of exciting to see kids painting the eggs and sort of getting a big kick out of it, right? So it was entertaining, and it was thought-provoking also.
Excellent, good stuff. Well, like I always like to do before we get into the meat of our conversations, would you be willing to share a little bit about your background to our listeners?
Sure. Let me see. Where could I start? Well, I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, which is certainly within the proximity of where you are, Dr. Vibe. I've been literally in New York City for the last 34 years. And I came here to be an actor and a singer. And I wound up buying a lot of real estate up in Harlem, New York, and mining that and making a lot of money and losing a lot of money. And I allowed myself to, I've been to Shanghai, China, and, that was when I started to get the thought of creating Black Athlete Sports Network. I've also been a person who was very highly into the historical significance of what New York City is, and I created an organization called the New York City's 350th Anniversary, and that was literally based on the Municipal Charter of Self-Government in America, which was signed in 1653. So I'm a history buff, and I'm also a metaphysician. I'm an astrologer. I've been an astrologer for the last 35 years. So if you combine all of those, sciences and, curriculums, and you'll sort of get an idea of my passion and my sense of commonality that we share with all human beings. And, Black Athlete, it's a primarily sports site. We consider it the definitive voice for information about and for Black athletes globally. And we have media outlets all over the world. We've got them in Africa. We've got them in South America. We've got them in China. We're like, the Chinese one is still in its like formative stages, but we do plan to get there, and we've got reporters all over the world. So, you know, it's been fun. It's been entertaining. It's been fact-finding, and we really feel as though we have something that we can share with the rest of the world, and that's what we're looking to do.
Okay, that's cool. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing a little bit of the history, and, well, I guess on this interview, we'll probably stick on the Block Athlete site, but you know what? I have a feeling we're going to go into other directions, too, which is all good with me if it's all good with you.
Okay.
Yeah, because you've got so much diversity. I've just written down a bunch of stuff. And where do I start? I wanted to talk about Block Athlete Sports Network. I may end up in China. I may end up talking about 350 years of New York, but one of the wonderful things, this will not be our first and only time together in this medium. So I'm going to start with the Black Athlete Sport Network first. How did that come into being?
Well, when I was president of the committee to celebrate the 350th anniversary of New York, I started to think about ways to bring people together based on our commonality. When I looked at the African American, I saw that the only opportunities that they had back in those days was through either sports or entertainment, right? And as I started to delve more deeply into, you know, what that meant to me as an African American, I saw that there was a niche that was not being served. As a matter of fact, it was being marginalized. So as I, you know, canvassed the daily newspapers and, you know, the ESPNs of the world, I started to realize that all the information that was being disseminated was through the cultural filters of a general white editorial board, and that really disgusted me, because what it did was give, you know, certain writers an opportunity to vilify and marginalize, you know, black athletes in a way where we became targets of, you know, various like attack groups, and you know, literally, you know, we were smothered underneath the sense and growth of, you know, who we are as a people, you know. So I said, well, gee, you know, let's try to put together something that can, you know, lionize and our effort, and put it together in a way where we actually begin to tell the truth about, you know, the history of the black athlete, not only in the United States, but, you know, in Africa and in England and in Haiti and, you know, like, we sort of, you know, connect to all different kinds of people all around the world. And, you know, it's ironic that we feel as though, you know, not only have we had this opportunity to do this, but we've gotten a huge amount of support from people all around, from people from all around the world, white, black, orange, or green. They understand our plight, and more importantly, they're willing to support it.
Excellent. Let me ask, did you have any critics of what you were going to, what you were doing in the early stages?
Well, I had tons of critics, especially, again, the media, who were literally battling on a, you know, every day. They would, you know, either steal our articles, or they would muzzle our sense of public relations, of, you know, how we wanted to get our name out there. They accused us of being racist. They accused us of being, you know, a number of different, you know, things that, you know, the only thing we wanted to do was to report the exploits and, you know, accomplishments of black athletes globally. You know, we consider ourselves the soul of sports. That's our, you know, like, that's our, you know, who we are, like our mask. And we really feel as though that literally describes us, you know, to a T. And, you know, a lot of people really didn't want to agree with that. They, you know, again, they wanted to, you know, put us out there in a way where, you know, as all African Americans or people of color get out there, they look for ways to denigrate you or to, you know, accuse you of, you know, false things. And, you know, us being a media concern, we have the will and the fortitude to fight back and make sure the playing field was continually leveled.
Excellent. Now, I don't know if you remember this or not. Do you remember the first story that was put on your site?
Let's see. The first story that was put on our site.
Or one of the first stories.
Well, yeah. As a matter of fact, I just, let me see. I just had a story that one of our writers, and as a matter of fact, he was a Caucasian gentleman who worked for CBS News. He wrote an article about the power of the black athlete and, you know, why, you know, people are literally afraid to accept the fact that, you know, it's one area in life where we outdo anybody, you know, in terms of, you know, being playing, you know, like our own particular sports, but our success at it. So, you know, yeah, there are certain, you know, formulas that, you know, we've, you know, like come to in terms of disseminating this information. And, like, again, whether it's in boxing or track and field or baseball or basketball, we have a view on it where if you read our site in comparison that you may watch an ESPN or read a New York Times and sort of see the difference like between what's disseminated, you will understand, you know, why we feel we're the category leaders in terms of being able to reach a fan base who hungers for information specifically about our target market.
Okay. Now, your site provides, and correct me if I'm wrong here, a real voice for the black athlete. Why do you feel other sports media sources are not or not willing to provide that real voice?
Well, you know, I'm not sure if it's, you know, if it's a white power thing, you know, or like, you know, just, you know, because we came over here as slaves, you know, back in, like, whenever we hit, you know, like, the American soil.
Yeah.
There has always been this disdain for, you know, African-Americans, and, you know, whether because, you know, our skin was darker than, you know, like, in other, you know, races or cultures, you know, we felt as though, you know, there was always, you know, something or someone who was willing to, you know, create, you know, false stories or negativity about, you know, black athletes and, you know, just, you know, African-Americans in general, right, that we felt as though we had to mount, you know, some kind of a defense in support of, you know, our lifestyle and, like, who we were in spite of, you know, how we've been literally ostracized and disenfranchised from the rest of the, you know, the population.
Okay. So with your site covering black athletes, what is your thoughts or what are your thoughts right now of the state of the black athlete in professional sports these days? And I guess the black athletes are more dominant in sports such as basketball and football and a declining amount now in baseball, and you recently wrote an article about that. But what is the state of the black athlete? And maybe, I don't know if there's any difference between college athlete and professional athlete in the United States.
Well, I think today's black athlete, with respect to, you know, college and professional, it seems that money has become the new, you know, kid on the block in terms of, you know, athletes being paid, you know, tremendous amounts of money to, you know, demonstrate his wares, you know, on a playing field or, you know, like within a college setting. And it's, you know, literally disillusioned a lot of, you know, like young kids coming up. I mean, like most kids today when, you know, coming up, you know, from the streets, you know, in the hood, they wanted to be the next Michael Jordan and now the next LeBron James or the next Kobe Bryant. And as a result of that, they have literally cast their fate with, you know, white agents, with, you know, with white media sources. And these organizations and the individuals will literally just exploit these kids, right? You know, we've had an ongoing battle with the NCAA regarding the play for pay issue, because we see a lot of kids that you know, come out of high school and, you know, they go in these universities and they sign these you know, 1-year scholarships, you know, to, you know, like perform in that collegiate institution's, you know, stage. And literally, if this kid gets hurt, he's got no insurance, you know, he's got no pay, you know, he's on a scholarship, and, you know, if that scholarship, God forbid, if he doesn't do well that first year, you know, he's, you know, cut from the roster, and he's sent back into the hood, and, you know, with no money, you know, the same way he went in, and subsequently, you know, he's on the corner, and he's, you know, got nothing to do, he's got no education, you know, so, like, what's, you know, like, what's availing? You know, he's going to be a crack dealer or a drug dealer or like, a, you know, like a gangbuster or, you know, like, it's just, and it's a vicious cycle, you know. Now, some kids do make it out of the ghetto, you know, like NBA players and NFL players. But when you consider their life expectancy in those, you know, areas of sports, you realize that, you know, you know, like between their entourages and between their agents and between their, you know, like their parents or mothers and fathers or whomever, they're literally broke by the time they, you know, like are thrust back into their communities. You know, like they might have a name, but, you know, we've seen the other side of the story where these, you know, some of these guys are homeless and people that I idealized as a kid growing up, you know. You know, like I played basketball, you know, like in high school and college, and I played with some very, you know, popular, you know, athletes, you know, but like to see how, where that's gone in terms of today, I think it's shameful. I think it's, you know, like these kids should, you know, like they're misinformed, and they should, you know, be allowed to look at themselves in a way where, you know, if by any chance they didn't miss, like, into the next level of sports, that they've got something to fall back on. And, you know, that's the big dilemma here in the hood, you know, is that they've got nothing to fall back on. Sure, you know, a couple of them might come out and be a rap artist, you know, but, you know, other than that, I mean, like, what's avail? And, again, there's no support here within the black community. You know, people are desperate. We're in hard economic times, and it's you know, it's just, you know, like, it's just terrible. So yeah.
Okay. All right. So let me ask, how many reporters do you have contributing on, you know, to your service at the present time, approximately?
Well, we've got off and on. We've got about 30 writers that, you know, come in, come out. You know, like, it depends on it. And if they have something to say. I mean, we also have a wire service that we, you know, pick up stories from the wire. But, you know, we've got about 30 writers that, you know, a lot of, like, editorial cartoons, you know, feature stories, investigative people. We cover the range of reporting, like any other media service.
Excellent. I'm going to ask about some different ongoing issues in sports, professional, and maybe some college, and with that involve black athletes. And I'd just like to know if you could give your thoughts and opinions, if that's okay.
What's our, I didn't catch your last.
No, I'm just saying, I'd just like to know if I could give you some ongoing sports issues that are going on right now.
Oh, sure.
The black athlete. Now, what are your thoughts on this current NFL strike?
Well, you know, the last I've heard of it, they were trying to divide and conquer.
Yeah.
Because the owners, like, they have a sense that this is not going to work out. As a matter of fact, I had one of my investigative guys go up to Toronto to speak with the CFL, the Canadian Football League, to see how their labor relations, you know, had worked out. And we're sort of compiling a report about that at this juncture. But, you know, I feel as though the players are in a very, like they're in a good position, you know, I would say at this point, you know, because the owners, they need the players. And they need the best players, you know, in order for them to keep their cash cow going. And I think, you know, most of the players, the ex-players, they have recognized it. They have, you know, won in court against these owners at some point. And I think as long as they stay together that, you know, like they're going to come out victorious. But, you know, you never know. You know, like money is, money is the common denominator here, you know. And I'm not sure if monies are offered, you know, like in different, you know, places that, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, people are, again, economic conditions in this country, you know, like these guys aren't making any money now. They're on stand down, right?
Yep.
So it's, it's a tough road to hoe here. So, I mean, hoe to row. So,
yeah.
Literally, like a bad deal if these guys fall apart at this point, you know. Because the life expectancy of an NFL player is, what, 2 to 3 years?
That's it.
3 or 4 years.
That's it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They get paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem. Next subject I'd like you to provide feedback on is a pending NBA player strike.
Well, I think, it's basically, you know, like the same thing. They're trying to make sure that, they control the situation. And, I've heard a number of different things in terms of the collective bargaining that, salaries are going to be, like, a lot lower. That's one of the reasons why, like, here in New York, when they signed Carmelo Anthony from the Denver Nuggets, that, it was necessary that he signed, like, right now, because he could have been out of a lot of money, you know? So, you know, the cost of bargaining is going to go down here, like, with the NBA. And, kids aren't going to be able to come out, and declare themselves, you know, from high school, you know, like the best players, you know? So there are a lot of things going on. These publishing contracts are going to increase, and eventually it's going to take away from the way things are played out here. So I look forward to these negotiations, but if they're not careful, they might wind up in the same position that the NFL players are. You know, like there's a war going on here. You know, and it's an economic war, and. Right now, I think these players have the advantage if they keep steadfast, right? And if they don't, they can stand not only to lose a career, but, tons and tons and tons of money.
Okay. You recently wrote an article, and it was the article that introduced me to you and your site about the declining numbers of blacks playing Major League Baseball. And, I'd like to chat about that because I've noticed it. Like my dad is a longtime baseball fan, and that's something that him and I discuss periodically, that we don't see as many black faces as we used to playing professional baseball.
Okay.
What do you... Go ahead, sorry.
If you consider that, baseball is... the great American pastime. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of the slogan, apple pie, Chevrolets, and baseball, right?
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that.
Yeah. I was born 2 days after Jackie Robinson crossed the color barrier. So he crossed on April 15th, 1947, and I came upon this earth. 2 days later in 1947. So,
yeah.
Being from a middle-class background, growing up in Buffalo, New York, I had a dad, I had a mother and a father, who deeply cared about what their sons were doing, and like because Jackie Robinson represented such a you know major you know kind of move like within the you know like the whole society, right, that everybody sort of wanted to identify. My dad wanted me to be the next Jackie Robinson, like not necessarily crossing the color barrier, but living, you know, he wanted to live vicariously through me because he didn't have the opportunity to play baseball, right? And so, like, what he did was, you know, we had a delicatessen, and we had he had a insurance business, and he bought you know, all the kids' baseball uniforms, and he got together with all the other dads, and we all, you know, got out, you know, to these various parks, and, you know, it was like the little kids in Negro League, right, where there were enough concerned parents to actually, you know, give the support and give us instructions as to, you know, how to play the game, and, you know, it really sort of set the tone, you know, for me, not only through my formative years, but through my adulthood, you know, until I, you know, sort of got to college and, you know, started to feel that other things were going on, which was, you know, like back in the 60s, I'm not sure if you, you know, remember those times, you know, in terms of the history books, but, you know, like a lot of things came out of the 60s, including, you know, like the leveling, you know, like the like Major League Baseball wanted to, I thought at that point, literally turn the game back into, you know, like the game that, you know, they had in, you know, yesteryear, you know, the Chicago White Sox and the New York Yankees. I mean, like they had one African-American, you know, back then, Elston Howard, you know, and, you know, like it was really, you know, like not a situation where one would like look at it and kind of go, gee, I want to grow up to be a baseball player, especially in light of the fact that, you know, the NBA and, you know, these other, you know, organizations, you know, were paying, you know, huge money, you know, boxers were making a lot of money back in those days. And, you know, it just didn't, you know, work. So, you know, the decline has been, you know, inevitable because, you know, with this new commissioner in there, who I feel, you know, was, you know, one of the architects of, you know, this whole new strategy to, you know, deplete the percentages of African-Americans in the game. And, of course, you know, like the troublemakers like Kirk Flood, who, you know, we sort of keep in contact with, you know, his wife, right, who is, you know, like really trying to take that level of, you know, like free agency to a whole nother thing, and to honor Kirk Flood for like his sacrifice. And, you know, like there's a lot of history with the Major League Baseball, you know, in terms of the Negro Leagues also, you know, so, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, how you want to look at it. But it seems like our sense of connectedness of like who we are as a people, you know, has always been predicated on our association with, you know, like some sport or some entertainment venue. So, you know, you look at that and you kind of go, gee, you know, if this is the only arena that we have available to us to excel, then we should, you know, like we should use that arena. And that's when Jackie and like all of these other, you know, like Larry Dobies and the Josh Gibsons and the Satchel Pages. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on, you know, with people who, you know, were much better than, you know, the active players that were in the Major League at that point, but they never got the opportunity to demonstrate their wares. So, you know, it's just been a like a long, winding road. So, you know, I'm not sure if that answered your question, but
it
got a little emotional. I thought, I was like, gee, you know, it's crazy.
No, really, that's crazy. That's what I want you to speak from the heart. That's good stuff. As we sit in Easter, and I guess one of the greatest athletes in his prime when we saw him perform on the world stage was Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all remember where Tiger came from, and now he had a fall. He's trying to come back. As you take a look at Tiger Woods today, what do you have to say, whether it's him personally, how he's been treated by the media, how he's treated the media? What are your thoughts on all that? Because that's obviously going to be one of the, you know, as time goes on, one of the biggest stories of rise and fall and hopefully rise again that we'll ever see.
Well, just to sort of give you a little introduction. When I was in Shanghai, China, about 3 or 4 years ago, when Tiger Woods was there, and he was building the first, golf course in China, right? And it was a really beautiful place. But anyway, I was there, covering. I went over there to try to create, ChineseAthlete.net, which I currently have a template up about. And I wanted to, really, because there were a lot of Americans that were going over there and playing basketball and, playing street ball. And, there was a lot of, things going on over there that I felt, needed to, have some exposure about. But anyway, the day that there was a press conference and Tiger, was there, it was like I was, me and another guy from Australia, we were sitting in the media throng, and, Tiger came on stage, and when he came on stage, he looked to the right, and there I was. And I was the only African-American there, mostly, they were all Chinese, and, I was like the fly in the milk, right?
Right.
And, Tiger looked at me, I looked at him, and he started, to talk about, his new golf course. And if he got to the end, my Australian friend said, look, are you going to ask, Tiger a question? And I said, well, I don't know. And then it came to the Q&A part, and I, just instinctively raised my hand. And, the whole room got quiet, right? And Tiger looked at me, and I looked at him, and he called on me. And I said, Tiger, you seem to have made a tremendous impact globally. And it was almost similar to the rise of Muhammad Ali and how he was accepted globally. And I said, that torch has been passed down to you. And, how do you feel about that? You could be the person that can literally, become so lionized that you could help not only the game of golf, but to help, African-Americans struggle within the golf infrastructure, whether, it be caddies, whether it be new golfers coming out. And at that point, I asked that question because I knew that Tiger didn't really consider himself an African-American. He was a Caucasian, right? Which I didn't really know what that meant. I mean, I understand, his heritage, but I still couldn't understand how he could, shun his father, Earl Woods, and proclaim himself to, to be, who he was. And he went on, he looked at me quizzically, and he kind of went I don't really feel as though I am, that I was anointed to be, the next, Muhammad Ali or anybody. I'm just, Tiger Woods. I was, I was gifted. He started to just dance through the raindrops, and I was sort of disappointed, because I felt it was an opportunity for not only Black Athlete Sports Network as a media source, but Tiger Woods as a person of prominence in the world, to really set the record straight. And, since that time, I've been reading about his exploits, and his friendships with, Michael Jordan, who another gentleman who, I feel has not really, supported, various causes, to the point where, it could create meaningful change. Or, other, prominent athletes. It seems like, once they get to a certain point, they lose their sense of who they are and, they really don't care. I don't really care about, who he's dating or, who he's married because, again, I think humanity is about humanity. And, as long as you're human and, you have, a connection to the human race, I don't feel it's anybody's business of like who you should date or who you shouldn't date, right? But, you know, my concern is, you know, the fact that he has not lent a hand to, you know, the progression of, you know, where we, you know, have come from as African Americans, you know, based on, you know, like when we were freed in 1863, right? So, you know, I mean, I've got a bone to pick, but, you know, like there are a lot of bones out there, and, you know, he's just one of them.
Okay. All right. So, gathering from what you just said, do you feel that black athletes have, is it something they should be expected to do in regards to speaking up, especially when they have, like your Michael Jordans and your Tiger Woods, they have a big audience, and they have the opportunity, if they wish, to, you know, be more than just an athlete, be more than just an entertainer. So I'm gathering from your most recent answer, you feel that, you know, they should take advantage of that opportunity. Am I correct?
Well, yeah, well, absolutely. When Muhammad Ali was, you know, boxing back in the days, and, you know, it was, you know, in the era of the Vietnam War, you know, he came out with a quote that, you know, still resonates with, you know, like within our community today. And that was, you know, like no Viet Cong, you know, tried, you know, has ever disrespected me. You know, like why are they sending me over there, you know, like to kill these people? Like they never called me a nigger, right? And, you know, when I heard that, you know, back then, it literally, you know, I sort of really, you know, as it was, and I kind of, it kind of made me feel proud that, you know, here's a guy who, in spite of the danger, and like he did suffer some repercussions behind it because, you know, he was stripped of his, you know, his heavyweight, you know, title, I mean, like even to this day, but, you know, he didn't lose his manhood, and I have respected, you know, him for that. And, you know, those are the kind of things when a Michael Jordan come out and say, well, you know, Republicans and, you know, Democrats alike, you know, are buying my sneakers. So, like, why would I come out and support, you know, just, you know, like the Democrats, you know? Well, you know, I think that was, you know, like an error, you know? And, you know, he shouldn't have said it that way. You know, I understood, you know, what he was saying. But, again, you know, we have struggled ever since we've been in this country. And I'm sure, you know, based on the Underground Railroad and life, how you got where you are in Canada, that you've had to struggle, right? So, you know, people, you know, we tend to forget, you know, those kinds of instances because, you know, it was so painful back then, right? And, you know, and in some cases, well, in all cases, it's still going on. So, you know, I just, you know, tip my hat to people like Muhammad Ali and like people that, you know, we have written about, you know, on Black Athlete, who has taken, you know, like another stand and just said, look, you know, enough is enough. Let's level the playing field, let the law of the land, which is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you know, like stand out in a way where we're all respected. And like we all have equal opportunity. Let's not just give it to, you know, people who have money. You know, if someone doesn't have any money, let's teach them how to make money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it seems like it's falling on deaf ears.
Right on. I want to go a little bit larger in regards, a little bit outside the sports arena. And what are your feelings right now, the state of black men in America, maybe not only just athletes, but black men in America in general?
Well, you know, there are two, you know, like in my belief system, there are two kinds of black men in America, right? There are, you know, light-skinned blacks, and there are, you know, brown-skinned blacks, and there are black blacks, right?
Right.
And if you can catch my drift.
I understand where you're coming from.
Okay. And, you know, when you sort of run into the real light-skinned blacks, you know, there are a lot of them who have no kind of, you know, I feel allegiance to, you know, who we are as a people, right? It is, you know, they have, you know, like I want to sort of draw an analogy between the house Negro and the field Negro, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, and that seems to be, you know, the way it is. And I really believe that, you know, if that, you know, is continued to allow, I mean, like I look at, you know, like President Obama, I look at, you know, a lot of other light-skinned folk out here who feels as though they're privileged, right? And literally, it's like the crab in the barrel, you know. It's people, you know, try to get out of the barrel and, you know, they're, like, pulled back down, right? And, you know, it's a shame. But, you know, we need cheer, you know, real change, not, you know, like rhetoric change, right? We need, you know, like we need a real change here, like in the hearts and minds of all people. You know, we're all God's children. And more importantly, you know, like we have kids that are growing up that need that sense of, you know, like a mother and a father and a village, right, to sustain itself, you know. So, you know, I'm just wondering where all this is going, you know, because, you know, as you can see, you know, in all over the world, there are a lot of things that are happening that, you know, makes one stand up and wonder, you know, just a lot of things politically, socially, economically. But at the bottom of the line is, you know, the African-American who is still trying to struggle and who is still trying to, you know, figure out a way to survive, you know, on the road less traveled. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. It's you and I both agree, especially with black men, it's a critical time for black men. And I was reading a story just recently, and I hope I'm quoting it right, that there are more black men in prison, and you know what, I don't know the rest of it, but it was just a really catching now in America than there were in 1850.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like that's really a testament, isn't it? I mean, you know, considering the fact that, you know, we didn't put heroin on the streets, you know, we didn't put liquor stores in every corner, right? We didn't, you know, like we didn't, you know, like put these, you know, marginalized, you know, public schools, you know, like out here. You know, it's, you know, it just seems so conspiratorial, you know, that it just makes you wonder. You know, like we, you know, like I think the thing that everybody sort of overlooks is the diet that we consume as a people, right? You know, we've been given, you know, like the garbage, you know, like you know, like on the earth. I mean, you know, nobody knows about, you know, veganism up here, you know, like in Harlem. I mean, like there are, you know, like some people, right? But, you know, people, you know, are dying literally, you know, because of what they eat, and then they have to turn themselves over to, you know, like the American Medical Association, who, you know, further, you know, just feeds them, you know, like these drugs and these, you know, like from Viagra on up, you know, it really becomes untenable, you know, when you talk about the alcoholism and, you know, the drug addiction, you know, and the prisons and, you know, where we have evolved, you know, from, you know, a couple hundred years ago. I mean, like, what's happened? Why is it still happening?
Exactly.
You know, I'm not sure if you remember the CD by Marvin Gaye, but that's, you know, like, that's my national anthem, right?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's going on, you know? If you listen to that, you will see that nothing has changed. And that's my whole, you know, like that was the crux of my article, right?
Yeah.
More things change, more things remain the same. And, you know, that's a shame.
Yeah. But we can't lose hope. We can't stop fighting.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely not. We cannot ever lose hope. And we always have to have faith. Because, again, you know, I consider myself a spiritual maverick, and I'm not a religious, you know, kind of guy, you know, like even though I was raised in a church, right, and I still have a lot of respect for God, you know, but it's a God of my understanding, right? It's not a God that, you know, that was, you know, constructed through idols and, you know, disingenuous, you know, lies, you know, through, you know, these, you know,
know, book, these holy books. I mean, it just makes me feel as though, you know, there has been a conspiracy, you know, for a long, long, long time, and we have not been privy to it. You know, we are just consumers of everything, and, you know, like, we don't own anything. And, you know, there's got to be a reason for that. And, you know, why hasn't, you know, that story been told? So, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's why people like yourself and myself and others out there who are blocker doing what we can in regards to especially take advantage of the digital culture and doing what we can and sharing the story through our own eyes, not another person's eyes, in, you know, what we want, what we see, and what we want the future to be. With that, what are you seeing or what are you envisioning for the future for the Black Athlete site?
Well, considering that we're a media concern, we are looking to connect with most of the social networks out here, like to create a whole new medium of exchange where we begin to, you know, like for instance, I mean, you can see what's happened in the Middle East and their ability through the use of the social networks have been able to, you know, make a government listen. And, you know, like not to say that, you know, like we're necessarily at this point into a revolutionary mode where we hopefully will look to be in an evolutionary mode. And, you know, like by that I mean, you know, like to make everybody aware of, you know, where we stand as a people. And I think if we can begin to galvanize, you know, people in that way, that not only, you know, will it be a very, you know, peaceful, you know, kind of process, but, you know, it'll give, you know, people this sense of pride in themselves that, you know, they're actually working to change, you know, things, whether it's in their house, whether it's in their neighborhood, whether it's, you know, like wherever they go. And I think it's doable. You know, a lot of people, you know, like come into, you know, Harlem and, you know, like they see these, you know, people who have, you know, like lost their way, you know, they're drunks and they're drug addicts, and they say, oh, you know, these people, you know, like they should just, you know, crawl into a hole and die. But, you know, a lot of people have had bad breaks, and they've actually come back from them. You know, I've, like, seen it with my own eyes. I've seen the resurrection of, you know, people who they thought, you know, like was, you know, was totally done in by, you know, drugs and heroin and LSD and all this stuff, you know. And today, you know, they've got a life. They've got a responsibility. They've got a family, you know. And, you know, it's just a matter on, you know, supporting, you know, you know, we're responsible, you know, for, you know, what's happened here, you know, because we weren't on watch. I mean, like, we were all sort of out there doing that kind of stuff, right, until, you know, somebody woke us up, right? And I just believe that if people, you know, continue to sort of look at ourselves as, you know, like that they deserve, you know, like to be equal, and that they're willing to fight and die for that, you know, that things will definitely change.
Excellent. What can our listeners do to help the Black Athlete Sport Network site?
Well, you can go there and read our stories every day. You know, tell your friends and family about us. I think that, you know, once, I mean, like, we're already, you know, like, we've, you know, we've got a number of, you know, page views connected to our site on a monthly basis that, you know, we have a huge market share. I mean, people not only from the United States, but, you know, all over the world. We've got people that are going to our site, and they love what they see, and they love what they read. So, you know, if we can begin to, you know, galvanize, you know, and mobilize, you know, people out there, and, you know, just, you know, go to the site and, you know, judge for yourself. We feel we're the best, and we're going to continue to grow, and we're going to continue to, you know, to fight for change, and we're going to continue to try to keep that playing field level, and hopefully the next time we have a conversation that we will have meaningful change, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sort of, you know, like involved with some folks that are now trying to, you know, create another, you know, political party here in America called the People's Party, right? And, you know, it's just, you know, everyday people, you know, that, you know, we feel as though we've been duped by, you know, too many politicians, whether they were black or white or whatever. It's time to, you know, throw all of them out because, you know, we're suffering here, you know, and nobody wants to do anything about it. And so we've got to take it upon ourselves. It's incumbent that we sort of, you know, definitely look at this from a perspective of real change and, you know, how we're going to go about doing it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something you might
okay.
you know, put on your radar and keep
yeah.
it, yeah.
Okay, no problem. Now, before we let you go for the day, and again, we do appreciate what you're sharing with us, what is the best way if people want to email, social media, any the best way to access the site outside of just the website address?
Well, they can email me at ceoandblackathlete.com.
Okay. Simple.
Okay.
No problem.
You know, I'd love to hear from you, and we could, you know, continue the conversation.
Okay. I know that one or two people may ask me, are you looking for any more reporters?
We're always looking for reporters. We're always looking for people who, you know, have something to say. And, you know, it's a great opportunity to, you know, to get exposure, you know, because, again, we are, you know, we have a great fan base, and we've got a loyal fan base.
Excellent.
And it's a great opportunity to, you know, get yourself involved in you know, going to various events and, you know, like reporting on those. But, you know, like you've got to be a real trooper, you know, like it's just not about, you know, calling us up and saying, look, I'm going to cover this game. And then, you know, like you just wanted a free seat, you know, to watch, you know, like, well, LeBron James or Kobe Bryant, you know, it's about
it's work.
It's about the work.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And you know, you will be scrutinized, and you know, like even before we give an affirmative, we're going to make sure that you know you are definitely, you know, the kind of person that we, you know, that we'd like to be affiliated with, and more importantly, who's going to do the work and to, you know, to keep the knowledge of, you know, our history out there in a way that we can always, you know, be proud of ourselves.
Excellent. Well, Ron, I'd really like to thank you for taking the time after a birthday party of your youngest one to share with us. We certainly, I can speak for myself, I was certainly enlightened and encouraged and educated over the last little bit that we've shared. And we look forward to continuing to have you on if and when you have time. And also, the mic is always open for you on our end. So please, oh, absolutely.
Cool.
No, absolutely. Anything, you know, if you want to have something to say. And I did see on your site that there's podcasts, so I'm sure you have your own
yes.
distribution. But if you want to come and share something on our network, the mic is open.
Well, you just invite me, and
I will.
I'll be there. You know, I take the time, you know, and because it's really critical that we continue to, you know, keep the message out there, and you know, I'm all for that. So,
okay.
Thank you again for letting me come on and just
share,
talk about my field. Because
yeah, just share.
You know,
it's all about sharing.
Too.
Yeah, it's all about sharing. That's all it is. At all. So thanks again. And as always, if you want to touch base with us on the show, you can email us at info@blackcanadianman.com. And if you're listening to us and you live in North America, you can leave us a voicemail message toll-free at 1-866-280-9385. As always, God bless. Peace be all and keep the faith. And Roland, thank you so much for sharing. And we will be chatting soon. Take care and God bless.
Okay, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Yes, thank you. Bye-bye.
That was Roy Rogers and Kenneth Williams. Canada.
BlackAthlete.com. Looking for the definitive source for information? BlackAthlete.com, that's where it's at. From Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, to Michael Jordan and Shaq. Football, basketball, baseball, and everything in between. We focus on all the major players and stories. Daily features, video on demand. broadcast the newspapers coming to a city near you. Tired of the same old sports programming? Check out blackathlete.com. Sports the way you like it.
Hope you enjoy the show. As we continue to tribute with Roy Rogers, Founding Father of BASN, BASNNewsroom.com. We had Meredith McLean in the house. What say ye?
How are you, man?
Happy New Year. Can you give your first impressions of Roy Rogers when you met like 20 years ago?
Well, it's a little bit of a, well, not really a bit of a story. I was on the internet, and I was literally just on the internet, just doing a regular, not even doing a Google search or anything. It was just roaming around. And I basically ran into the site, Black Athlete Sports Network, and from there I basically I started reading the site and looking at what was on there, and you know, it was something that, you know, again, I hadn't seen it before or anything like that, and just on a whim, I saw there was an email address to reach Roland, and I just sent him. I said, you know, I like your site. If you're looking for writers, you know, just let me know. Within about a week or so, he got back in touch, and you know, he said, you know, what do you, you know, we talked for about a good hour and a half or so, and I wound up writing something. The first article I wrote, it was a was sort of a contrast between Sonny Liston, Mike Tyson, and Jake LaMotta. And it was, you know, he basically gave me the freedom to be able to do that. And that's basically how I got started. Within about 2 years or so, he asked me to be the editor-in-chief. And, you know, that's basically, you know, what it was. You know, that's how our relationship got started. I found out that we were both Mets fans, so I was like, "Oh, great! Another person, another miserable person." So, it were, you know, it, you know, needless to say, you know, we formed a real nice kinship. You know, it was a little bit more beyond just, you know, the boss. I know people say it clichéically, but it was a little bit more than just your regular, you know, boss employee. You know, we were able to, you know, share a lot of things and stuff just as black men, because we had that, you know, once I saw the kind of vision that he wanted to do with this, you know, I had never really had a chance. I mean, I had worked at black organizations before, but never a black sports organization. And that's what really intrigued me. And he gave me a lot of the freedom to pretty much just write anything, you know, opinion pieces, historical stuff, you know, and I've, you know, I sort of kept that mantra with you guys when I was, you know, I still do, basically, in a sense. I just, you know, I think the only time I've ever delegated stories for folks to write was the weekend of the Malice at the Palace. And even then, it was a sort of thing of having everybody write it, look at it from a whole different point of view than what white mainstream media was going to do. And again, you know, we had, you know, the basic thing that Roland has always talked about was, you know, the basic premise of BASN or BASN Newsroom has always been to celebrate and to celebrate and commemorate the most unique being in all of sports, you know, the black athlete. And that's whether it's college, pro, professional, college, high school, amateur, what have you, whatever you, you know, every sport that has ever had black athletes play for it, they've innovated it. They've been innovated and most importantly imitated. You know, boxing would not be the same without Jack Johnson, Joe Louis, and Muhammad Ali. Football would not be the same without, you know, Fritz Pollard, Jim Brown, and Warren Moon, and so on and so forth. You know, baseball would not be the same without, you know, Moses Fleetwood Walker, Jackie Robinson, Willie Mays, Bob Gibson, and so on. Basketball the same. Without the Black Fives from back in the day, the pre-NBA day, or Wilt Chamberlain, or Jordan, or Magic, or what have you. Every sport that the black athlete is involved in, they leave their mark. And it doesn't have to be the Big Four. We all lived through the revolution of the Williams sisters and Tiger Woods. Now we see it passed on with guys like Lewis Hamilton and Naomi Osaka and so many other folks, you know. And that's the thing. No one, you know, one of our colleagues, Fred Whitted, always talks about we have to tell our stories. And that was the basic thing that Roland and we all tried to do with the site, was tell our own stories. And, you know, to no surprise, folks try to sort of ridicule us and try to go after us when we dared to tell the truth. But we always, our thing was always, look, you don't got to believe a word I say, but you know, all you got to do is look it up. And that's the thing. My thing has always been, you know, I tell you guys, I have like three basic rules. You know, if you misspell a word, that's on me. If you tell me that Carrot Top is the commissioner of the NHL, we got a problem. Because the first thing, because see, when we dare to be quote unquote blackathlete.com or the Black Athlete Sports Network, the first thing that they're going to try to do is to go after our credibility. And, you know, that's how it's always been with black organizations. They always go after your credibility. And even, you know, I've had numerous incidents where people tried to say that we were, weren't telling the truth. Matter of fact, there was an incident where we wrote something about the, I think it was to do with the Toronto Blue Jays, and I forget the actual how it came up in context, but a Canadian writer tried to sort of call us out, so to speak, and, you know, Roland got a little whatever, and I was like, look, I got the information, I have the archives and all the other stuff, and if he wants to you know, challenge that, bring it on. And we always, you know, there were, you've had to deal with that. Michael's had to be, you know, there's always been someone that has tried to go after our credibility. But see, that's the first thing that I always make sure. I make sure that, you know, one of the things I always make sure is that whenever we put something out there, that factually it's correct, because that's how, organizations have problems, because it's more important to be first than it is to be accurate. We don't have a deadline, so to speak. We're sort of like a news magazine. You know, we don't have to deal with deadlines per se. We're in that way, because we're, you know, because we do opinion pieces and we do historical stuff, there really is no deadline. And we're able to put stuff.
I remember doing the Lewis Hamilton, the first time was about six years ago. And the guy said, "You don't know anything about racing, do you?" I said, "I know enough.
Well, this artwork.
That got me really angry because what he was saying was, I didn't know what I was writing about.
Oh, that was short. Sure. And see, because we dare to be, you know, right from a black person's perspective, then we're always, you know, in a lot of people's eyes, people are going to say, you know, they're going to question our credibility.
Yeah.
What's even worse is that you'll have other black folks that will question your credibility as well. I mean, you know, look, you expect it from, you know, the white folks, you know, but when you get it from your own, it's even worse.
And we got the Omar in the house, Mighty Omar. What's up, brother?
Hey, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, Pat.
All good.
What was your interaction with Roy Rogers?
Oh, how you doing? Okay.
Okay. What was your interaction between Roy Rogers today? And what was your interaction with Roy Rogers, founding father of Black Athens, where did you first meet him?
It was very brief. We talked a couple of times, and then he transitioned. So I really did not have that much interaction with him, but I did make myself familiar with a lot of the missions that he was going to really see through and really has spearheaded amongst us all. So a lot of the things that we're all doing is because of Roland Rogers and his dream of how things should be as far as media covering athletics. And all we're doing is picking up that mantle that he started and others have started and just trying to do our best work in our last few years, because I'm going to tell you I've only got a few more years left. That's just where I'm at. I mean, three years at the max.
I love doing this. I love writing. I love, but now it's getting to the time where you have to enjoy yourself. And
right.
I hear one thing.
You finish one thing, you got to start another, and that's the way it is. And unfortunately. If you're looking to become rich behind this, most of us don't make any money. So we do this because we love it.
I like to ask Tony and you, what in the past 60 years, what is the biggest, was the biggest black athlete effect on sports overall? What was the biggest one? Tony, you go first.
Well, I'm biased when I say this, but I would still say it's Cassius Marcellus Clay.
Yeah.
I think his influence is still being in many ways. I think he, you know, it's ironic that you know, the great Sidney Poitier passed away a couple of days ago, and you know, he was basically the godfather for guys like Denzel Washington and Will Smith, the late Chad Bozeman. Just a litany of folks, and I think in many ways, you can even go back as far as you know Jack Johnson and Joe Louis, you know, for Ali. But the thing about Ali was that, you know, he was able to transcend sports during a time when you didn't have the 24/7, 365 media frenzy that you have now. You know, if Ali had been around during the ESPN era, it might have, you know, things might have, I mean, he still probably would have dealt with the same sort of racism and so, but it would have been done on a different, it would have been done on a different level. I look at him as being, you see, I go by eras. It's the sort of thing where Joe Louis was perfect for his era. Jim Brown was perfect for his era. Ali was perfect for his era. Jordan, perfect for his era. Dr. J was perfect for his era. LeBron James and Kobe and so on and so on and so on. I'm a little biased because I feel like with all of the folks that we mentioned, Ali, you know, Ali is a favorite, and it almost has nothing to do with his boxing. It always has to do with the kind of a man that he was and the kind of man and his legacy still is. It's hard to, you know, I even say all that and say it's tough because, see, think of 60 years. Think of how many things have changed over the years, you know, even just the way we report, even just how sports, even just how sports is looked upon now, you know, with the three, you know, with this three, with this 24/7, 365 feeding frenzy, it's different now. Things are reported differently, some for good, some for bad. I always like to think that it's for the positive because, you know, everyone, even though I think everybody has the same mentality, people like to be appealed to different ways. I think one of the reasons why ESPN isn't as popular as it was is because they got away from what made them good, and now they're sort of just like everybody else now. Now, but see, now everyone else expresses themselves differently, and they want to be, and they want to be, they want to get their news differently.
Yes.
Sorry to be a little long. Sorry to be a little long-winded there.
Well, it's okay. It's okay. It's good. But why are you back? What's it took you 150 years?
In recent history, I agree with Tony that Muhammad Ali by far is the most influential sports figure of this generation or any generation. But I also believe that Colin Kaepernick, when all is said and done, when we analyze what has been done to him by 32 white male owners that are basically running a high-priced plantation. All you have to do is read the book by William C. Roden. We can't get people to buy that book. You cannot read it enough of what this is. And to see Demaryius Thomas die in Georgia in his shower as a result of football-related seizures at the age of 33 years old. His mother was in prison when he was 11, put himself through school, put himself through Georgia Tech, became a professional football player. Yes, he made a lot of money. But when they were done with him, they cast him aside, and he died in his shower.
Yep.
How much more do we have to see this? What happened to Vincent Jackson? I mean, football is – I love the sport, but the end result is brutal.
Yeah.
My guest, I was supposed to have Reuben Brown on the show this morning. He had to cancel because the doctor told him, I need you to go get an MRI right now. Now, he's had a neck surgery, and obviously there's some issues there. We don't know all of what these guys are going through physically.
Yeah.
And to me, their union has once again sold them out. And we saw this with Gene Upshaw, if y'all remember. He became part of the problem. I believe with Demaryius Thomas, the longer you keep these guys in place, they become part of the problem instead of the solution. You went from getting 17 checks to 35 checks, right? You went from playing 16 games to almost 18. I mean, you're playing 17, but it's over 18 weeks. All of these things are not good. There's not one football player for playing an extra game.
And you had another playoff game, too.
Exactly. Another playoff game. I mean, this is nothing but a money grab.
Yeah.
And look at what they're doing in Buffalo.
What
did you say, Gary? I'm sorry.
Buffalo did the same thing that Oakland did years ago with stadium. I don't want to get off track, but how is the stadium going up there in Buffalo?
I think it's on its way to Oakland. I think Oakland is the scenario that Buffalo will be at. Because you got to remember, for you to do a stadium deal, it's usually a 25-year deal, right? The more public money you got in there from the building of the stadium, coupled with the tax subsidy hooked into the agreement, how are you going to go before the public and say, we are proposing to give a billionaire $3 to $4 billion over 25 years? That's what you're trying to tell the public. And that's why Oakland doesn't have a team. Oakland said, oh, no, you're going to build me a stadium.
I am very upset with the Raiders.
Yes, sir.
Because the Raiders told the Oakland Raiders, go ahead and move. Yeah, what the Oakland Raiders did was they, forget you, city. After all the years we supported you, we're leaving you anyway. We're going to build a brand new stadium in the middle of the desert.
Yes, sir.
What are you doing?
Right. We took you back after you left us. We renovated the stadium to your specifications, and then you want to leave us hanging.
Anyway.
This is what they're going to do. I don't think the only thing hanging up a deal in Buffalo is that back-end money. They want 1.4. Now, to do the deal, you're talking about another maybe 1.5, 1.6.
Yeah.
You're talking about doing a deal for a billionaire. This man is worth $5.2 billion, and you want to commit $3 to $4 billion to a billionaire when you can't even pave your street.
And
that's what holds the deal up.
I do believe, and people are going to be crazy, but I do believe that the Oakland A's are going to move to Las Vegas too.
I think they're already gone.
I think professional sports are at the pimp level, and Pat, the proposed thing that they want to do in Buffalo, they want to make it smaller than Rich Stadium.
Sure, 10,000 less seats, 20,000 less than the original stadium plan. Remember, the current stadium has been reduced 10,000.
Why would you do that?
Suites. You get more money from the suites and other things hooked into it. You want to see, remember we were talking about this before. They no longer want to just sell tickets to games. You're going to buy a package. Food and beverage, your food, your beverages, your ticket to the game. You're not going to be able to just buy a ticket to the game. They want all the money. And then these ignorant yahoos out here think that they can pour mustard on themselves, jump on tables drunk, and we want a tailgate. They don't care none about your tailgating.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
All these people care about is money. And the problem is that they have a public perception problem right now. they want to do what these people say, but she's up for re-election next November, right?
Yeah.
And how can you go up for re-election when you're talking about giving a billionaire a $4 billion package, which includes a new stadium and double the tax subsidy? So the tax subsidy is $28 million a year, right? They're trying to double that. Multiply that times 25 years and tell me what you get. You get close to another $1.6 billion plus $1.4 to build a stadium plus another $500 to $600 million in infrastructure. So you're talking about a $4.5 billion corporate package for a billionaire when you got roads that you can't pay. You've got things that you're leaving behind while you're catering to a billionaire that says his contribution is selling you PSL. That's a crackhead move.
Damn.
And I'm like, I'm sitting up here, y'all reject a private plan that says, hey, we got to make this look profitable or don't give us the money. It has to be a profitable venture. They don't want to talk about it. I remember when they proposed that. That's that 50-acre site. There is,
right.
The BART doesn't run out there.
No.
Your current site, you're on. You're near the airport. You're near the BART system. Why would you not, if you're going to build a new stadium, why would you not want to
build
it at that site?
You build it right there.
Right there. Absolutely.
Right there. What are you doing with you?
You know what the problem is that they owe money on the Oracle. See, the Golden State Warriors left you in a trick bag. The Golden State Warriors moved to San Francisco. They still owe a note on the bond on the Oracle. And they still, I'm telling you, dude, these people, you've got to stop giving these professional franchises corporate welfare. Oakland should teach the rest of the country. This is why you got to stop it. Let them go. If you say you're going to move, go on and move. But you cannot keep giving these billionaires and millionaires corporate money because they're going to want more and more after a while. And now look at Oakland. Oakland is stuck with the Oracle bond note. They're still paying on that. Golden State done moved over to the J. Morgan Chase over in San Francisco. You're still paying on the note from the request that Al Davis made when you redid the old stadium.
City of Oakland, still
right.
paying $1 million a year for Al Davis. Get out of here!
Right. Why are you even entertaining these idiots anymore? If you want to move, go on and move. We don't even need you. Hey, you don't need them.
But
it's not
thing,
worth it.
One thing we got, we really got the issue that I bring up is the Oakland Coliseum is the third largest employee of the Bay Area. Which that's a real problem.
Well, Gary, this is the thing. We came out to Oakland. We proposed a private investment deal. They were receptive, but the problem is in Oakland was that you couldn't get the county to work with the city.
That's right.
And then the
That's
state
right.
couldn't work
That's
with
right.
the county and the city. And it was like, y'all can't work together.
Well, you
How
had,
are you going to do
three,
this?
You had three entities. You had the Oakland Coliseum Commission. You had Alameda County Commission.
Right.
And you had Oakland
And we got the same problem here. It's not that they can't work together. Everybody want to be boss. You got county, you got state. They're trying to do things behind closed doors, and they're trying to run some flim-flam on these people. And these are a bunch of yahoos up here. All I want to do is keep my team. All I want to do is keep my team. But let me tell you, the devil is in the details. That last deal they did, what they didn't tell people was that it was for $277 million over 10 years. In other words, the subsidy was $27.7 million once you added up all the numbers that they were given the franchise along with renovating the stadium. So on paper, the county executive said, this is the first time in history that the Buffalo Bills will pay us rent. I said, how in God's name are y'all that stupid? On one hand, I'm paying you rent for $862,000, but on the other hand, I'm giving you $28 million in a tax subsidy. Are they paying you rent? They're not paying rent. That's on paper, and that's garbage. They have got to make a principal stand against these billionaires.
Gentlemen,
and see, they did the same thing in Oakland.
The end of the football season.
Huh?
And I have a list of teams that are going to fire their coaches. I don't know how long my list of fired coaches will be nine. I think eight or nine coaches will be fired this year. I got Cleveland Browns, Chicago Bears, Jacksonville Jaguars, L.A. Chargers, Denver Broncos.
I don't think the Chargers.
Las Vegas Raiders. And both
Raiders,
teams
yeah.
in New York City. Those are my list. What is your list, Tony?
I got some of them. I sort of agree with Pat. I don't think they'll let the guy from the Chargers go after one season. I think his security blanket right now is Justin Herbert, and I think that'll keep him. I don't think both New York teams. I think it's not a matter of if Judge gets fired, it's more when. Yeah, Salah's got to, as honest or ugly the Jets look, they are making strides, and they do have a nucleus defensively. They still have to, I'm not sold on Wilson, but they're going to probably give him another year or so before they can move him a whatever. But I think that there's probably going to be, and I can't really pinpoint it right now, I think that there's going to be a surprise where I think a guy with a winning record may wind up losing his job this year just because of whatever. I just get that feeling.
Well,
I don't know if you feel the same way, Pat.
How many black coaches are there left?
Well, right now you've got the brother in Houston. You still have Brian Flores, sadly, if they hadn't started so slow, they might have stuck in the playoffs. But I think they'll keep his job. Now the Tomlin situation is interesting because Big Ben is on the way out, and they're probably going to be rebuilding again. The thing is, whether we like it or not, they've been very, the loyalty has been on both sides in regards to Tomlin in Pittsburgh. But I don't think there was a part of me I thought about a few weeks ago that if they didn't make the playoffs that they would let him go. But see, I think he can leave on his own. I don't think they'll fire him. I think because he's built up that much of a cachet with them. And plus, let's face it, their whole thing has always been stability. They've had three coaches in those 60 years that you talked about. They've all won a Super Bowl. They've all been to multiple Super Bowls as well. And remember, 15 years, he's never had a losing record. That should be
right.
That's going to be the thing. That's why I'm saying, and I think he will call his own shot. If he wants to go out on his own, he'll do that. But see, I also think that if he was out there on the market, he'd have himself a job within 24 to 48 hours as well.
Right. I think you're absolutely right. I just think he I think Pittsburgh, the ownership group, is much more loyal to him than their rabid fan base.
Absolutely. The fans have been trying to fire him for years.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing keeping him there. So,
what about,
you know, and remember that no matter what, if the ownership group respects you and they want to make a change, certain coaches, they tend to resign, don't they?
Sure.
You know, Bill Cowher kind of left. Chuck Noll kind of left. Marv Levy kind of resigned.
Yeah.
But it was
either,
you know, the owner told him either you're going to, you know, I'd rather do it this way. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And
they will allow them. They will allow them to, you know, write their final chapter in a sense.
Right. And Marv Levy, I remember for a few years, he kept saying, I want to get back in the NFL. He was 70-some years old.
Yeah.
He never got that opportunity, but he did get an opportunity to be a general manager. And I think Mike Tomlin, I just think he's been I think it's totally on, and you don't know where these ownership groups are going, but
sure.
I don't trust any of the black coaches with any of them.
Absolutely, and
they just don't get the same latitude.
The thing that helps him is that he does. You know, if it was anybody else but the Rooneys, I think he would have been fired years ago. The Rooneys are probably the last of the Mohegans in the sense of their old school loyalty and whatever. And then, you know, look, they have their flaws too. But I think for the most part, they have, you know, their whole thing has always been, at least, you know, again, for the last 60 years, it's been stability. They've had three,
right.
I mean, think of it. You got to go back to Tom Landry's first 30 years with the Cowboys to really show that kind of loyalty. They've had three coaches in basically 60 seasons. I mean, Christ, how many coaches has Buffalo gone through since Levy? Matter of fact, since Levy left. How many coaches have they gone through just since Levy left?
We've had five coaches since 2010.
Yeah.
I mean, since Levy, you've had Wade. Oh, shoot, I can't even name them all.
They've
Malarkey,
Exactly.
Yeah. It's just that they're a very stable organization, but I don't trust any of them just based on what I've seen done to Jim Caldwell, who turned around a Detroit Lions franchise and was showed the door.
And they're still feeling it. Matter of fact, you could say that too with the Bears, because since Lovey left,
they haven't been right. Exactly. Matt Nagy, well, who you got? I got Denver. We're watching this guy. I think Vic Fangio will be fired in the morning. Gary Zimmer out of Minnesota, I think he'll be fired. I think the Giants like this guy.
Judge,
for some odd reason.
Does Gettleman survive,
That's the problem now. If I'm them and I'm sick of Gettleman, I fired Gettleman, hire my GM, and then let him fire Judge because he's going to bring in his own guy. You see what
sure,
I'm saying? So
sure.
You don't even have to deal with it. But
now,
Urban Meyer's already been fired. Nagy, they already said they're going to fire him. So
I think
Gary's pretty right. I think you're going to have about 9 openings.
Mm-hmm. I think the one wild card in this, I think, just my own opinion, Sean Payton.
Yeah.
But
the problem is he might make the playoffs with this crazy situation.
I know.
Yeah, they're still in it. They're still mathematically in it.
And that would be sick. I mean, they suck.
I am not pleased with Jenny. San Francisco. He made the bonehead moves out here in San Francisco.
Well, what's very interesting is they have yet to officially name a starter for tomorrow.
Right.
I would not be surprised if we see Mr. Lance on the center tomorrow.
Yep.
It's really weird because Jay has seen the LA Rams five times in a row, which is really
interesting. Yeah. He can beat the Rams, but he can't beat nobody else. That's the problem.
I mean, they need to play the Rams. Just ask the NFL to let us play the Rams 6 times a year.
Really?
I mean, they watch the Rams every opportunity they get.
The Washington Football Club is finally announced February 2nd will be the NFL, the new name.
How about this, Gary? Gary, I got something for you. Gary?
Yes?
Oh. I came up with a list of head coach eligible black coaches. You know what my number is?
What is it?
31.
Woo!
Then
woo!
I got 31, but also coaches that they allowed the time clock to go out on. Sherman Lewis, Emin Thomas. Now they're too old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's almost 31 assistant black coaches that should have been considered for coordinator or head coach positions that they continue to play games with.
Yeah, sad. I'm just curious. I'm curious, Pat. What are you hearing in regards to the Jacksonville job? I'm anxious to see who's gonna be the soldier that takes that job.
I think Leftwich is interviewing today.
Oh, okay.
I would not want that job because the organization stinks so bad.
No, Jacksonville, man, they've had one of the top draft choices. They're just you got your quarterback. Hey, I'm telling you, they got a lot of talent, dude. They got a lot of talent, brother. Josh Allen is a beast. Josh Allen on defense, not the Josh Allen in Buffalo. They got some talent, brother.
Trevor Lawrence is primed and ready.
You bring Byron Leftwich in, I think that's who you're looking at mentoring, you know?
Yes.
I would be very interested in the Jacksonville job. And the thing about it, now the thing, Gary, you got to realize, too, that whoever comes in, you're in a situation that you can come in like Sean McDermott did in Buffalo. Sean McDermott got full control. Brandon Bean is a GM, but Sean McDermott run the show here.
Yeah.
Because when you take over franchises that are longing for some success, usually the person that hires can get that type of control, and they gave Sean McDermott full control. Sean McDermott, okay, he's got Bill Belichick power here.
The thing that would probably help Leftwich, he played there, so he knows the culture.
He played there, right.
He knows the culture.
He's been
there.
To the playoffs. He's been to the playoffs. He's won a Super Bowl. He knows Shahid Khan, the owner. So I think he could come in, and if I was him, I think they would give him a lot of power, personnel power. And that's what McDermott has.
I could see a sort of thing like what Brian Flores has in Miami. I could see that happening for Leftwich. On the other side of the
And Flores, those are all basically his people. You got Reggie McKenzie down there. He's got almost a black front office in Miami.
Yeah,
and he's got a lot of personnel power down there. And I could see Byron Leftwich having that type. I would not want to come in to a situation like that without that type of power. Because, like, look at what's happened to Cuffy in Houston. They have just mangled that franchise.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
not a job for anybody to take. they give a brother the job because he just wants to be a head coach. But they gave him a terrible situation. And I think that Leftwich could be a prime candidate in Jacksonville, but I wouldn't discount any of the others too. And I think Jim Harbaugh is going to be the lead candidate in Chicago if he's in.
Oh, don't get me started with Jim Harbaugh. Please.
I'm sorry, but
he's going to be the lead candidate in Chicago. They want him.
He led a team to a Super Bowl. He did it with a mobile black quarterback. Hello, Colin Kaepernick had his best year. Who was his coach?
And you got one of the best. You got one of the better young quarterbacks. If they give him some more weapons, thank God.
So you know Harbaugh's going to have full control, right?
He's probably going to have to do a little steel cage match with Miss McCaffrey, but I think he'll win, though.
Yeah. I think he will because Chicago is desperate now.
Yes, they are.
They've made some bad mistakes. Old ownership, letting Lovie Smith go was the dumbest thing on the planet. He's got a winning record. He took you to a Super Bowl. He made a dumb mistake, and
he took them to
going to be right back at that point.
Think about it. He took them to the Super Bowl with Rex friggin' Grossman.
I know.
That's scary.
Come on, y'all.
That's scary.
That should put him in the Hall of Fame right there.
You know. I think there's going to be some crazy, crazy openings. I'm hoping black candidates get their at least a.
I think you got the number right. It's just a matter of who. It's just a matter of who. I think.
Yeah, 8 or 9, I think, is right. No question.
Yeah, I do because what's happening? They want to win right now. They want people to win right now. You can't do it. Chicago, Jacksonville, Cleveland. I mean, you gotta win now.
I
think Cleveland will probably screw something up again because they're a screw up organization.
As they always do.
You know.
Yeah, they've taken it to another level. Remember, this is the second incarnate, and they've been even. It's almost to say that they're worse.
Yeah.
He's the least of their problems, but yeah, he's definitely in the top five. But they need an exorcism, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Gary, I've got to go. Same old stuff.
I'm working on a story. It's going to take me a couple of weeks. I want to do on the MFL.
Oh, okay. No problem. Guys, Gary, I got to go. But again, thanks for this. And Pat, I will definitely be in touch. Feel free to buzz me or email me, man. I'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
All right.
Thank you for coming by the show. All right. We're going to get out of here today. As we leave, thank you for coming. I hope you enjoyed the show. See you next week.
A melting pot on the corner selling rock, preachers pray to God.